Chris Wessling joins us now, NFL.com writer and co-host of the Around the NFL podcast. Thanks for doing this, Chris. Yeah, I mean, look, the takeaway from yesterday, and the point has been made 1,000 times already, but Aaron Rodgers is not human. What he did yesterday and what he's done over the last 8 weeks, frankly, is just, it's out of this world.
Yeah, we've heard Troy Aikman now twice in the last 2 years say that Aaron Rodgers is playing the position at a higher level than it's ever been played. And I think you can even go further and say there are two or three, maybe even four or five things he does, assets that he has that other quarterbacks have never had. We already know he's made Hail Mary into a routine play. He throws on the run into tight windows better than anyone. I think his arm talent is better. His ability to extend plays and improvise is better. There are so many things he just does better than everyone.
You know, it reached such incredible levels when he overthrows somebody on the run, scrambling out of the pocket, and you're shocked. And you're just like, oh, wow, Aaron. Like, you can count how many mistakes he made in that game. Like, if you go over, it's very easy. You're like, oh, yeah, then this happened, and then that happened. And there was a couple of overthrows, the interception, and then those are on Aaron Rodgers. Everything else is just, yeah, like you said, it's incredible. He's playing out of this world right now. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, he's just asked to do so much more than other quarterbacks, and their base offense seems to be him throwing his receivers open.
Yeah, and that was the other thing, too, in that game. When Davante Adams got hurt late, and they were like, oh, what are they going to do? Now they're without their top two receivers. And it reminded me a little bit of up here in Canada, our Montreal Canadiens. They have a goaltender by the name of Carey Price, and it doesn't seem to matter who gets hurt in front of him. As long as he's in net, they're okay. And I felt the same thing with Aaron Rodgers. Like, yeah, okay, he lost his another receiver, but he's like, he'll still figure it out. He'll still find somebody else, and that's incredible. That's something that you really don't say for anybody else. The only thing that bothered me a little bit about that game from the Packers' standpoint, though, was their second last drive of the game when they got that pass interference penalty that moved it to the 35, and then deciding to take the ball out of Aaron Rodgers' hands. And I really thought the difference in that game was that the Packers got away with their mistakes. Mason Crosby ends up kicking that 56-yard field goal. But I really don't understand the thinking of taking the ball out of Rodgers' hands and deciding the game on, you know, we're going to burn a couple of the Cowboys' timeouts. The Cowboys, on the other hand, they spike the ball and they get punished for leaving the time on the clock. But really, I thought that was the Packers really got away with one there.
Yeah, I think you can do that with any football game, probably. Take the coach's decisions in the last couple of minutes and put them under a microscope. But I think you're right. In football, too often it comes down to who's lucky or who has the ball at the end.
Chris Wessling, our guest here on Sportsnet tonight across the Sportsnet Radio Network. And you know, the way that first half was playing out, and you know, social media starts cramming for Tony Romo to get on the field, and all of a sudden it's like Dak Prescott turns on a switch and just turns into an elite level quarterback, and he goes toe to toe with Rodgers there for the back half of that game. The Cowboys, as much as they did lose yesterday, they got to feel like they're in a pretty good spot. It's almost like Russell Wilson-esque in the fact that, you know, they got a really strong quarterback on a cheap contract for the next number of years.
Yeah, that's true. It's amazing how many experts are on social media, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm number one on those expert lists.
That being said, I really did want Tony Romo to go in the game just for the whole offseason of, should they trade Tony Romo? How does this change things? The meltdown that there would have been. But yeah, it was obviously pretty stupid that most people were calling for Romo when Dak had done nothing really wrong.
Well, yeah, to your larger point, I think they have a tremendous competitive advantage having Dak Prescott on a fourth round rookie deal. Like you said, it's just like Russell Wilson with the Seahawks, where they can, you know, the Seahawks went out and got Michael Bennett and Cliff Avril on cheap contracts and free agency when they are undervalued. Maybe the Cowboys can do stuff like that to build their defense. But if you look at their offense, how many perennial all pros or future Hall of Famers are on that offense? Jason Witten's going to the Hall of Fame. Dez Bryant has a chance. Ezekiel Elliott just had one of the best rookie seasons in history for a running back. Who knows what Dak Prescott's future is, and maybe three of your offensive linemen are Hall of Fame.
Yeah, they're clearly building something special there. Again, it does feel a little bit like Seattle, but on the offensive side of the ball instead of the defensive side. One team, speaking of Seattle, it felt like a bit of a wake-up call for them. Watching that Falcons game, once they fell behind, you didn't get the sense that they were going to be able to get back into the game because their line play has been just so terrible this season. And for me personally, anyway, I was like, there's no way that they're going to be able to keep Russell Wilson off of his back, especially with Atlanta pinning their ears back and saying, all we need to do is get to the passer. All we need to do is hit Russell Wilson and beat the likes of George Fant to do it. And then, you know, you look at the teams that advanced, and while, yes, quarterbacks are obviously so ridiculously important, but outside of the Packers-Cowboys game, the teams with the best offensive lines ended up advancing. And watching the Patriots later after the Seahawks and how much time they give Tom Brady against an elite defense like Houston's, Seattle has to be thinking now going into the offseason that addressing the offensive line is going to be a priority, no?
Yeah, I think that one of the stories of the 2016 season is how important offensive play has been, not just in the last couple of weeks, but determining who made the playoffs. I think so many of the talented teams from 2015, Cardinals, Panthers, name two, the Broncos is another one, were done in by horrible offensive line play. And the Seahawks got away with it because they have that nucleus of talented veterans who know how to win. But you saw how they played on the road all year. And to me, this was a mismatch game just because the Falcons are so good. And the Seahawks don't play well on the road. They don't have that extra split second where their offensive linemen can hear the play before the defense. And I think that came back to haunt them. They can't keep taking tackles that other teams wouldn't even put on their roster and asking Tom Cable to turn them into NFL starters.
Do we believe in this Pittsburgh defense? I mean, it feels like because of what happened early in the season, and they weren't that great, that we're kind of underselling them. But, you know, even James Harrison last night was an absolute monster. He's 39 years old. It seems like everything about this Pittsburgh defense says they could do something here with this club.
Yeah, I'm sort of two minds on this one. For the last, 6 weeks, I've been saying the Steelers defense is a lot better than people think. They're a legitimately tough defense, and now I think everybody's catching on, but I also think have they really been tested by a great offense since that 35-30 loss to the Cowboys? They've really shut down some bad offenses during that stretch, and I don't count the Chiefs as a great offense by any stretch. So I think the big test is going to be in New England this week. I do think they have a top 10 defense now, but the story of the season, in addition to offensive line play, is good offenses, great offenses, dismantling defenses that were held up as number one in total defense or scoring defense.
Yeah, and that's the thing, like with this Pittsburgh defense right now, like they at least have the pass rush, and as we saw with the Texans this week, if there's any way to get Tom Brady off his game even a little bit, it's with a great pass rush, and that's what Pittsburgh has kind of flashed lately.
Yeah, it's amazing to think that James Harrison, almost 39 years old, might be the most impactful defensive player left in the postseason.
Yeah, Dupree hasn't been bad either. I thought when you were going to say the Steelers defense hasn't been tested because Harrison's 39, I thought you were going to say for steroids. I was like, yes, this would probably be the time to check in on James Harrison. Although I think what are his parameters if you want to check him for steroids? You got to go to his house with no help, and that was what he proposed to Roger Goodell. And then all of a sudden it was like, yeah, no, that story fell by the wayside. We're just gonna leave James Harrison alone. Did you think Kelce had a case with that hold? He blew up. He seems to me at least like a bit of an idiot. That penalty he took late in the game was terrible. He had a bunch of drops. I hate it when guys talk a bunch of trash and then don't live up to the billing and don't play their best game. He did not have a good football game. He made a couple of catches, the one deep ball late that kept them in it. But then to strip the referee down, I thought it was a hold, but also maybe don't call that one in that situation. Is it bad to think that way about, you know, how calls should go in the playoffs differently than a regular season?
I might not be the most unbiased person here because the least favorite part of my job is hearing players and coaches whine about calls at the end of games.
Right.
And this is just unbelievable whining and crying in a game where you got thoroughly outplayed. You got dominated for the first three quarters. Le'Veon Bell had more yards on his own than your entire offense did. If you don't want to put the game in the officials' hands, play better, and that includes Travis Kelce, who dropped a pass and then the next play had a 15-yard penalty. Is it a holding penalty? It sure looked like a hold to me, and I think Eric Fisher took responsibility for it after the game, but I think that's a hold. Is it called all the time? No, but I have no issue with that being called in that situation.
Yeah, I didn't have real big issue with it either. It's funny because Kelce just, with that one game, I don't pay a ton of attention to that division. It's not one of my favorites. I know it was pretty good this year. The Chiefs aren't exactly a sexy team to watch night in, night out, or week in, week out. And yet he just somehow went right up my most disliked players ranking just through that game. I was like, you killed your team on the field, and then you blasted an official after it. Maybe stick to reality TV. Maybe that's your avenue.
And that's the shame of it, that a lot of people don't watch the Chiefs. They're a sleeping Midwestern team, and the conversation should have been that Travis Kelce was the all-pro tight end, had a career year, and with Rob Gronkowski out, he was the best player at his position. Instead, we're talking about him whining over calls.
Yeah, and that choice on the leather jacket he wore in the post game last night, I think he could have done better with his choice.
That's
there.
What I liked the most. That's
oh,
what
really?
I liked
you
most.
Liked the leather?
Yeah, it was a good look. He looked good. It was fresh.
Chris Wessling, our guest here on Sportsnet tonight. But Andy Reid comes out today, and Chris, he says, we can win a Super Bowl with Alex Smith. I've long been a detractor of Alex Smith. I mean, he's fine. He's okay. But if you are going to win, you sure can win a Super Bowl with Alex Smith. But if you are going to, everything possible has to go your way, and you need to have every piece imaginable around him to make it work. And it's just it's too tough a league to make that happen.
Yeah, I mean, the 2015 Broncos won with a much worse quarterback than Alex Smith.
But they had one of the greatest defenses of all time, right?
Right. If everything falls into place, it's possible. But your chances go down tremendously when you have a quarterback who leaves plays on the field. So unless Tom Brady gets injured or takes a turn for the worst, or Ben Roethlisberger gets injured during the 2017 season, I just don't see the Chiefs as a team making it out of the divisional round again.
Yeah, that said, what did you think of Smith's game? Because with all the drop passes, I couldn't really put that one on him. I know he did have one overthrow late in the game that he probably should have had. But ultimately, I thought he kept them a little off balance with his legs. He made some throws, and his receivers just failed him. And the running game, just it was non-existent that evening.
He didn't attempt to pass over 10 yards in the air until after halftime. And this is my ongoing issue with Alex Smith. I mean, you can say his receivers dropped passes, the running game wasn't there, but you're not testing the defense. You're leaving plays on the field. And if you're not even going to test the defense beyond 10 yards, you're not going to keep up with the other team.
One of the things, too, from yesterday, and I guess the whole weekend, was kickers taking care of business. Kickers are relevant once again in the NFL.
Yeah, it's amazing.
In a positive way, that is.
Most years, kickers are much better in the better weather in September and October. And this year, it seemed to be the opposite. That one of the best weeks of the year, I think they were perfect in week 15, 51 for 51 or something like that, going into the Monday night football game. And then now in the playoffs, they're just about perfect too. So it's weird that they're getting better throughout the season.
Just one parting shot on the Texans. I know Bill O'Brien didn't want to say that Brock Osweiler would be his quarterback in 2017. Good for you, Bill. I think everybody knew that was coming. But I felt bad for the Texans on Saturday night because the defense played so well, at least in the first half. They lost it on special teams. And of course, with Brock Osweiler, this is an ongoing problem for the Texans. They just, their defense is continuously strong. They just can't seem to find any kind of an answer at quarterback. Is there, what do they have to do? Do they have to go out and get Romo, maybe Tyrod if the Bills let Taylor go? Is that an option?
They're a little bit handcuffed because what are you going to do, cut Brock Osweiler and take a $25, $30 million cap hit?
Yeah.
And then if you do that, do you have another $20 million to go out and get a Romo? Or whatever it takes to get Tyrod Taylor. It seems to me like they almost have to just bring in someone cheap to compete with Tom Savage. I don't know. I'd like to see some brilliant solution to this that I haven't thought of yet.
Chris Wessling, I really appreciate your time tonight. Thanks for this.
Thanks, Chris.
Anytime, guys. Thanks.